Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Hello, and welcome back. This is episode 259 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. I am Sean Penrod, your host, and I'm really excited to bring you another great guest, another fantastic Magic player from around the globe. We're going to dive into their story and learn what they have to share about Magic, how to improve, how they do well at events, and bridge the gap between where they are and where we are. But before we do, I want to say thank you so much to Paragon City Games for supporting the show, being a proud sponsor. They provide the prize support for the Patreon-exclusive giveaways that we do, and the Sealed Leagues that we do every set. The Sealed League just wrapped up. Congratulations to Suban, who won. It's always fun to play Magic, and he consistently does well. So he's kind of like one of the end bosses in our Sealed League. So come and join us next time for Rivals of Ixalan and see how you fare against some of the oldies but goodies in our league. So we'll definitely be getting the prize out to Suban. And next episode, I will also be announcing the winner of the Patreon-exclusive giveaway for the month of November. This person will receive a From the Vault Transform, so that's going to be really exciting. And the way that you get involved with the Patreon-exclusive giveaways is by supporting the show directly. If you feel like I have earned your support, then go to mtgpro2.com/Patreon, where you can pledge any amount you want per episode. Now, I'm going to be adjusting the Patreon structure this month in December, so come check it out. There's going to be new reward levels and new goals, and I'm excited to release the details of that here in a couple weeks. As far as what's going on here in Magic, of course, we had the World Magic Cup last weekend. Congratulations again to Japan for taking that down. And this weekend, we have GP Oklahoma City, and there's going to be a MTG Pro Tutor Prodigy meetup on Friday night. Dan and Luke, two of the admins for the Facebook group, are going to be at GP Oklahoma City, and they're putting together a Prodigy meetup. So if you want the details on that, if you're going to GP Oklahoma City, join the Facebook group at mtgpro2.com/Facebook group. There will be an event in the group with all the details, including where and when. I know for sure it's Friday night, and Dan and Luke are putting together all the details. So come and join them if you're going to be at Oklahoma City for a night of fun, food, and magic. And whether you make it to the meetup or not, best of luck to everybody who is going to be attending GP Oklahoma City. I look forward to having you on the show when you make top eight. So go and do the Prodigies proud. That's it for the top of the interview. Let's bring in our guest, sit down, and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I'm super excited to have our guest with us today. Our guest has been playing Magic for most of his life, but has only been grinding Grand Prix for about 2 to 3 years. This summer, he played his first Pro Tour in Japan, where he played a winning in for top eight, and followed this up with his first Grand Prix top eight in Warsaw 2017. Coming to us from Lyon, France, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Louis Bachot. Louis, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Doing fantastic. Thank you. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
Sure.
Excellent. Now, prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Louis, you can do so on Facebook. We're going to get him into the Facebook group, mtgpro2.com/Facebook group. You can join there if you're not already a member. And he'll be there. You can tag him in the post, say thanks for being on the show, ask him a question. But that is where you can connect with him because he is not on Twitter. So, Louis, tell us what you have going on outside of Magic. If anything, is Magic all you do? Are you working? Are you a student? What do you have going on?
So I'm a student. I'm studying political science. I'm in fifth year after high school. So that would be like after a college degree in the U.S. Next year, I'm going to try to have to pass the certification to be an English teacher. And after that, maybe do some research on the U.S. So I'm really interested into you guys' country. You know, U.S. politics is basically what I study.
That's fascinating. I didn't know that was, I didn't know that was a thing that you can study U.S. politics in other countries. That's kind of fun.
I spent a year in the U.S. in Georgetown University, mm-hmm. D.C., studying government. And I'm back in France now.
Excellent, excellent. Well, that's a lot of fun. Where'd that interest come from? You just kind of grew up in your family as like foreign affairs people, or like where did it come from?
Nope. I kind of randomly got into this prestigious politics school, government school, mm-hmm. and I don't know why, but the classes about the U.S. were the funniest, I guess, because there's a lot of strange things in your country, in the political system, in institutions. So I really like that part of studying, and these were my best classes. So I just
kept going down that road. Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of interesting things on this side. I mean, Is that the case with most countries, or is ours particularly interesting?
I don't know. I mean, it doesn't have such a long history, but it's mm-hmm. a rich one, very wide country, federal state, so a lot of different legislation.
Mm, good point. So a lot going on.
Yeah, that's very, very rich, very deep.
That's fun. So that's neat. So you're in your fifth year of university, pretty much. So master's degree is basically what you're working on, at least our equivalent. So that's pretty cool. And as far as gaming goes, where did that come from? Did you grow up playing games with siblings or parents, or where did you get into games?
Yeah, I have a bigger brother. I mean, he's probably the one who introduced me to Magic. And we've played PlayStation, Game Boy, Pokemon, computer games when we were kids, but I haven't played a lot of video games for a very, very long time, because basically the only game I play now is Magic, and I don't really like other games. I feel like I'm wasting my time when I'm playing them, because I feel like, well, you should be practicing Magic. You could be playing Magic.
I could be playing Magic.
Don't we say it's the best game in the world after all? So the other games I enjoy are like sports, because after all, soccer or tennis are games. But in like video games or board games, I don't play anything else than Magic. And when I play other games, it's sports.
Huh. Excellent. Well, that's fun. I have an older brother too, and you know, we do carve out some time and, you know, play some video games together too, or still, so that's pretty fun. And yeah, I grew up playing games like you, and that's pretty neat. And you kind of mentioned it, but we would love to dive into your origin story with Magic. Can you take us back in time and tell us the story of the first time that you saw or played with Magic cards?
I can't. It's too hard. I've been playing for such a long time. I don't remember. I know cousins played, my brother played, friends of our parents, I mean, the sons of their friends played. So basically around 2000, 2001, the Onslaught, 7th edition, Mirrodin period, I just started seeing cards and everything. And then I think during school and then middle school, my brother had this LGS in his town. He would go to on the weekend, and then he would come back and show me some cards he brought back. We'd have some strategy magazines in French that I don't think exist anymore. Now you have the internet. And we would just play on the floor. So for like 5 to 10 years, that's all the Magic I played, just with my brother. And occasionally with friends, but mostly with my brother at home.
That's fun. Man, that's so neat. And so is Onslaught the first set you remember playing?
Yeah, I think that's the year I started. So that would be like 2000, 2001 or something. That's the first booster pack I got, I'm sure.
Yeah. Do you remember your first rare?
No, but I remember there was an undead warlord in there, which is an uncommon, but that's the card I remember.
Yeah, that's cool. I do not remember the first booster pack I bought. I know most people do. So I remember, you know, I remember being introduced, you know, by a friend. I don't remember the first time, but I remember, like you said, sitting on the floor, you know, playing Magic at like a sleepover or whatever, and casting Fireball. That's one of the things I remember. And to me, the card just made sense. You know, you do X damage and then bounce it for one, and X damage, and you just keep bouncing it around. That was pretty cool. And I remember my first trade, but I don't remember my first rare. So, you know, later on when I came back into Magic, those are pretty concrete memories for sure. So that's a lot of
I remember
fun.
Our father giving us money so we could buy packs. They were super expensive. The grocery store, you know, not in a specialized gaming thing. We would buy them very expensive, the 8th or 9th edition booster packs, and we would read the quotes, because at the time it was not like story related. It was quotes from poetry or theater, drama, novels.
Huh.
So we would come back to our father and say, hey, look at that. There's like this Shakespeare quote. I mean, it's French authors in the French cards, but in English it's like Shakespeare and things like that. And so the parents would like that, you know?
Uh-huh. Nice. it's literature, Dad. I need more money to buy literature.
I actually remember, for example, in middle school, I knew an author that was very, very unknown, and my teacher couldn't believe that, just because it was on Scave Zombie, and it was in the text. This author that she had never had a student know about this author prior to that.
Oh, that is so cool. I love hearing the things that people learn. Like people say, oh, like, you know, I learn words and stuff from magic and like the keywords, the mechanics, like those words actually relate to, you know, what they do. And so if you understand, you kind of get context. I mean, I know that I will forever recognize a magpie because of Thieving Magpie. Like, you know, that, yeah. that card, I'm like, oh, hey, look, now when I was a kid, I'm like, oh, look, that's a magpie because I know that from magic. So,
and you're playing in your mother tongue, but when you play magic in a foreign language, you learn so much, so many English words you learn from magic. That's for sure.
That's
one
cool.
of the things everyone should probably tell you, even if they don't realize it, is the amount of complex, specific words we learn, sometimes archaic, sometimes they're not used anymore, but from magic in English, and that's a very, very big resource that, I mean, that could lead parents to encourage their kids to play magic.
Totally agree. So since you started playing, what has been your favorite set?
My favorite set? I don't think it's a question I ask. I don't know if I'm going to be very good on all the flavor and questions like that. I see magic as just a game. You know, so I would answer you in terms of limited format then.
Sure.
In terms of limited, I don't even know. I really enjoyed Cans of Talk here.
Cool.
And if I could go back to nostalgia, I really liked Time Spiral back in the day. So many weird things happening in this set and so many unique cards that still see play today. So I like Time Spiral too.
Excellent. At the time. So along the same lines, what's one of your favorite cards?
I really like Young Pyromancer.
Ooh. So for those of us who don't know, what is it? What does it do? And why do you like it?
So one in a red, a human creature. It's a 2/1 from a core set not so long ago, M15 probably or something like that. And whenever you play a sorcery or instant spell, you create a 1/1 elemental token.
Excellent. And so why do you like it? I'm assuming you've used it to good effect.
Yeah, I've played it a lot in Legacy. I've had a lot of success with it, and I just really enjoy that you basically can beat anything with it. I've beaten Emrakuls, I've beaten Grizzlebrands. It's a 2-drop, it looks innocuous, but it basically says, you kill me right now, or if I untap with it, I'm going to win the game. And that's such an amazing quality in a 2-drop. You know, we've had some other 2-drops like that, like maybe Backrat in Standard or Dark Confidant, but Young Pyromancer is my favorite one because it leads to fun deck building, fun decks with a lot of cantrips and draw spells and counter magic and things like that.
I was going to say, you just follow it up with a bunch of, you know, cheap or free or draw more spells to, you know, just
I really like
ping off damage.
I really like the interaction with Cobalt Therapy, and Cobalt Therapy might be one of my other favorite cards because it's such fun to play. And it goes well with Pyromancer as well.
Sweet. Well, that's good stuff. We love learning, you know, a little bit more about you and your likes and where you're coming from. And when you started getting more serious about Magic, what was an early challenge that you faced but that you eventually overcame?
It took me a lot of time to make my first day two, actually. Maybe like your prodigies are might be in that situation. I've went to, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 Grand Prix. I felt I was having a lot of preparation on Magic Online. I had good deck lists. I was well prepared, and it just didn't work. And then suddenly, I don't know what happened, but I don't know how I overcame it, but I made day two basically all the time after that. Also, the cut changed to 6 and 3, which is obviously way easier. I don't really know what happened. I can say for sure.
Interesting. Yeah, so making day two for the first time is definitely, you know, a goal that many of the prodigies have set for themselves and are trying to achieve.
The first time I made day two, I also had my first like 3 pro points and cash finish. So it kind of all happened at once. I don't know why, but
that's interesting. Yeah, it's kind of like floodgates just opened up, you know, and
yeah, exactly.
Interesting. So you're trying, and then it just kind of bursts. That's really interesting. Now, for newer players to Magic, you know, those who, you know, they have the basics down, but, you know, they're also looking to take it a little bit more seriously. What advice do you have for them? What's something that you wish you knew when you were a newer player that you think will help them?
Wow, there are a lot of these. So, yeah, I think a lot about Magic. I used to write some articles, so I like talking about game theory. I think one of the biases I had earlier was maybe not wanting to play the best deck or just wanting to be original. So I would build my decks myself and get good with them, and I have some success and just tune some obscure archetypes, fringe decks, tier 2, tier 3 decks. And I would get good with them and have fine results, but if I had practiced with Jund or decks like that, it would have been so much better. And I actually realized that not that long ago, because when I start playing like tier 1 good decks, I'm like, this is easy mode, you know? Hmm. I guess Spot Season Tarmogoyf, why haven't I done this all my life? So yeah, but I don't think I regret that, because this gave me a knack for deck building, and I still build my decks myself to this day. So I don't know, maybe I would say don't imprison yourself into a deck because you like it. Mm-hmm. It's not because you spend time. It's a fallacy, you know, sunk time fallacy. You spend time into something, so you don't really consider other things. But you should be objective, and if there's really a deck that you think will be better, even if it's not fun, even if everyone at your store plays it, if you're going to a Grand Prix, you should just really give yourself the best chance.
Yeah, totally agree. Excellent. So as you have, you know, been playing Magic for a long time, what are some of the milestones that you can look back on and say, hey, you know, I improved here, I improved there?
I basically did the whole routine, starting from very low and going higher and higher. I didn't have, like, sometimes I see interviews from pros and they're like, you know, I started in Cans of Talk here, and now I'm in the top 8 of the Pro Tour, and I'm not that gifted. It took me years to beat my brother, then I went to the store, to the town store, and then it took me years to become the best there. And then I played GPs for one year or two, and then I started making day twos and then getting better and better. And yeah, very progressive. So I can say there's like a real milestone, because it just followed the logical course, because I never stopped and I always work very hard and put a lot of time and effort in it. But I can say there are like real, real milestones for me.
Well, like you were saying, you know, beating your brother, that's, you know, you mentioned that, so that stood out to you. And then, you know, being the best at your store, that stood out to you. Making day two, like you talked about. So those are kind of the big check marks that I can see that you've identified in your Magic history.
That's not like a one-off exceptional event, and then suddenly you change plateau or you reach another threshold. Because beating my brother, I would always beat my brother from time to time. It's just more consistently beating him, and then gradually becoming the best of my store, and then gradually becoming like a 65% win rate player in Grand Prix and things like that.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. It's like you said, it's not like you lose all the time and then one day, oh, I finally beat my brother, you know, or yeah, exactly. You always lose and oh, you finally, you know, win the FNM or whatever. Yeah. No, it's like you're learning and winning and losing and playing, and then little by little, you know, you can look back and say, oh, hey, it's been a while and I'm always in the top of FNM or whatever. And so, yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah, if you wait for that moment, you might be disappointed. And it also works the other way around. It's not because you have a great showing, you have a great weekend, and then you think, oh, that's okay now, I'm going to do fine all the time. Well, guess what? It's not going to happen. You're going to still have some bad weekends. You know? Yeah. I had a Grand Prix last weekend, and I did terribly. So just after the fading one.
Interesting. So what would you say is your worst Magic moment? And what did you learn from that experience?
I don't know. Magic is a lot of fun. So I remember clearly some like key mistakes.
Sure. But let's pick one apart.
But I don't feel like they were bad moments, because I've always thought that, you know, mistakes may help you get better. And I've never been very sour about them, because there are so many tournaments. It's not like there's always the tournament of your life. And to this day, I still make a lot of mistakes every day I play. I play a lot, and I see my mistakes a lot of time. I recognize them, so.
And I love that. And that's definitely where we're going. We definitely want to dive into the lessons learned and what you took away. So pick one of those moments, and let's talk about it.
The worst moment was like 4 years ago. I was disqualified for a Grand Prix. Mm-hmm. I submitted my deck. So it was a limited GP. I was actually 5 or 6-0, which was the best I've ever been. It was like my third GP. And I submit my deck. I give my deck to my opponent, and he just counts the card and says, wait, you're playing 43 cards, that's weird. And I don't know what happened in my brain, but I did not count the cards again. I was like, yeah, sure, give me my deck, I'm going to crush you. And then I play the game, and I draw a card that was not supposed to be in my main deck, I think. Mm-hmm. And so at some point, I start beating the dude, and he's like calling a judge because because he thought it was weird that I had a 43 card deck, and I ended up being disqualified because I knew I had an illegal deck. I didn't call a judge, and I was crushed at the time. I had like a 10-hour journey to the Netherlands with a buddy.
Gosh.
And I had to negotiate with my parents to go there, and that happens because I was that was dumb. So like it was not, it didn't give me an advantage because that was a 43 limited deck with not the right amount of lands. I had just forgotten to sideboard basically, but I should have called the judge, of course, when I realized that. So afterwards, I became way more precise with the rules. I actually became a judge, and yeah. So the 6 months after the disqualification, I was waiting for the, you know, the DCI can tell you if they ban you or something. And these were unhappy moments because I was getting better and better at the game. I was trying to improve, but I just felt like somehow I could be deprived of playing the game for 1 year, which seemed like an eternity, and still would feel like an eternity right now. So, yeah.
Interesting. What was their decision?
Oh, they didn't. They didn't.
Okay. They didn't. Okay.
Yeah. There was like no prior like intent. It was just random. I don't want to say random.
Yeah. I mean, that's really interesting because I have a friend who was at a limited Grand Prix, and something happened in the draft. Basically, like somebody made a mistake or whatever, and like he ended up with an extra card, and then he got DQ'd because, you know, like they thought he was cheating and all this stuff. But this was his first offense, and then he got a note saying that he was banned for like 6 months or something like that. And it just, it really crushed him. And it just seems like, like I understand that there's rules, but then for like first offenses, I don't know. I don't know what it's like being a judge. I don't know what it's like, obviously, you know, making banning decisions, stuff like that. And so I was really curious what happened to you. And you said that this was several years ago, but you didn't get a ban off of your first offense. And unfortunately, I know someone who did. And so it's just really interesting. Really interesting. So what would you say to somebody who is, you know, might face a similar situation? You know, they're going to Grand Prix and they might face a challenge like yours.
You should always call a judge. That's just basic thing you always hear, but it's true. Like whenever you notice something from your side, on their side, I call judges myself all the time because I don't know why, but I make a lot of dexterity errors. So, you know, topple my opponent's deck, draw an extra. So, you know, I just always call judges.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I've definitely gotten more comfortable at doing that as well, you know, and like you said, it could be for the smallest thing and yeah, you just want to call them over just to make sure everything's on the up and up, whether, you know, you flip a card while you're shuffling or your opponent flips one of their cards while they're shuffling or whatever. Yeah. You always just give them a call and see what's going on. Yeah. So,
great. And I think the more you play, the more you know the rules, and becoming a judge have helped me understand how the procedure guide functions. People who don't know them might fear that if they say something, they might get something very bad. But the truth is, if you call a judge on yourself and if you notice something, you'll rarely, rarely, rarely get anything really bad. Even the game loss is very rare these days. The penalties are getting milder and milder. And whether things really bad could happen is if you don't call a judge or if you lie to them or if you just change the truth a little bit. Yeah. So I don't think it's worth taking any risks in that direction.
Totally agree. So what was the process like for becoming a judge? How was that for you?
I have a buddy who's like the regional coordinator of judges. He made me pass a test in my LGS. It was just like an exam, a school exam about the rules, and I've been playing so for such a long time that I kind of knew the rules. So I didn't have a lot of work to do, and that was it.
Nice. Good stuff. And so you're what, level one then?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, very cool. Now, everyone's journeys has ups and downs, and you just shared one of, you know, the lows and what you learned from it. So tell us about your proudest Magic moment to date.
I would say it would be GP Lille. In 2015 or 16, it was a modern Grand Prix. I missed the winning in for top 8. I've had better performance since at the PT or last GP. But I think it's the proudest for me because I liked the way I played the whole tournament through. I can't point out a single mistake I made. Of course, I might have made little mistakes, but no major one, nothing I noticed. And I had built the deck myself. It was Traverse the Ovenvale Death Shadow deck, so which became very classic after that. But at the time, I was one of the only ones playing that card in the deck. and it was a gent variant. I was basically playing a brew. I've been working, putting a thousand, maybe a thousand hours on, talking to friends, playing hundreds and hundreds of games on Magic Online, and I did my best result at a Grand Prix, missed winning in for top eight, but it was heartbreaking, but I was very proud of that because that showed me that I could still do well and play my own decks.
Yeah, that's fun. So you just, in the zone, you know, you practice, you had your own deck, and you did really well, making it all the way to, you know, one round shy of the top eight. So that's really cool.
That's the ideal.
Yeah. Oh, that's neat. That's neat. So diving into your most recent success here at GP Warsaw, that was a standard event, right?
Yeah.
Excellent. So can you tell us how far in advance did you choose your deck, and how did you choose your deck? Tell us about that process.
You're going to be very disappointed. It's going to be some fun stories. So I had not played Magic in a very long time because after Nationals, I was supposed to go to the PT in Albuquerque, but I lost my passport, so I couldn't attend the Pro Tour.
Oh, no.
So I had like this six-week break because the schedule was this way, so no Magic. And then I was like, okay, for these 2 weeks, you're going to go down south, test with the French team, then take your plane, play the Pro Tour, and you're going to be very deep, intensely into Magic. But this didn't happen because I lost my passport because I'm stupid. So I wasn't supposed to go to GP Warsaw, but I was like so frustrated. I was, I'm going to go there. I need to redeem myself. I need to show myself that I can still go to tournaments because it had been such a long time. Which I hadn't practiced a lot. So I just said, just going to pick the deck that updated the Pro Tour, that won the Pro Tour actually. And so the day before I take my plane to Poland, I would go to a friend, the one who usually lends me the cards, and we cannot find the cards for the deck. Hmm. Like we're looking for a deck box with the Sultai energy cards and they are impossible to find. So we turn the whole house upside down. And at some point I've given up on the idea of having a good deck. So I start taking his binder and his boxes and pulling some cards apart just to try and scramble together a shitty deck just to play in the event. And also, I had already given up on this one. I was like, okay, lose my passport, go to the tournament with no deck, sure. And in the end, we find the box. I managed to get the deck together, and yeah, the rest is history.
So you did find this whole tie box?
Yeah,
we found it. Oh my gosh, that's funny. So after you tore the house apart, after you started, you know, putting together just random, you know, pile of cards, you end up finding the box. Oh my gosh. Whew. That's funny. That's funny. And this was the day before. So you just kind of chose the best deck from the Pro Tour and said, I'll play that one.
Yep.
That's awesome. Now, I mean, what's neat is though that you do play a lot of Magic, you know, and so it's not like you just walked off the street and said, hey, what's this? And top eight, you know, a Grand Prix. You did have all that experience and whatnot built in. So even though you didn't specifically practice a lot for this tournament, you did obviously bring your knowledge from before. So yeah, how was it navigating the Grand Prix? What was some of the highlights from day one for you?
Exactly. So I have a roommate and he doesn't play a lot of Magic, but he told me, wait, you're going to go to the GP. Why aren't you practicing? And I was like, you know, I know these cards. I've played all of them. It's standard. I've been playing Winding Constrictor and Walking Ballista for the whole last season. Nothing has really changed. It's not going to be hard. And he wasn't believing me, but I don't think I would have gained a lot of edge by practicing because I knew the decks. Mm-hmm. And the highlights from day one, I don't know. I played against, I think I played fine. Just, I didn't feel like anything was different. You know, it's just the nature of Magic is that you might play your B game, for example. I didn't say I was definitely not on my A game, but things will go your way. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it's very encouraging. If I'm not saying it's all about luck, but try to do your best the way you play. But sometimes the things will go right for you, and it definitely did in the tournament. I kept some hands people would not have kept and got there. My opponent mulliganed. So I don't know, not really flashy stories, but yeah.
Yeah, sometimes things go your way, you know?
Yeah, because the thing is in Magic, if you're, so for example, I think my win rate in Grand Prix is something like 63 or 64%. And that's a good average, you know? But to actually do very well in an event, you need 80 or 90%. So that's not something anyone gets naturally. Even Owen Tottenwald might have 70, and I'm not sure he's even up there. So you always need this extra little bit of of things going your way or not going your opponent's way during the event to do well.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that's the nature of Magic.
That's really cool. I'm glad you broke that down because that makes sense. You know, we've heard, you know, good percentages and whatnot. And so for you, like saying 65% is pretty good. But you're right. Like to make it all the way in like a Grand Prix, you need like 80%. Always have to have something, you know, that goes your way, ends you up on the high end of your average. Wow. That's cool. That's cool.
And what this means is that no one can go into a Grand Prix or a Pro Tour and expect to make top eight mm-hmm. because like no one has an average. That's top eight quality. So you always need to be a little bit luckier, a little bit better prepared, have a little bit better deck than usual than the others. And that also means something, which is, I think, an important lesson, which is you should never take things for granted. You should never think that victory is owed to you because you're prepared. There's this bias that when you spend a lot of time practicing for something, for an event or for anything in your life, that you're entitled to victory. But when you go into a Magic tournament, you kind of just talk to the people around you. Sure, there are the locals and whatnot, but you will also find like 50 or 100 grinders who spent as much time as you did, and then more, you will find like 20 or 30 pros that are way more talented than you are, mm-hmm. and you realize that you're not entitled to anything. So this could be very tilting and frustrating, but remember that it's not because you spend a lot of time and you think you're good that you're the best in the room. There are always people that are as involved, as prepared as you, and you should be mindful of that.
Yeah, ooh, I love that. That's powerful. Now, what is the biggest mistake that you have seen players make as you attend all these different events and you've gone on your own path?
So I think, you know, complicated boards, combat math, I'm still struggling with that myself, but the little things you need to get better are the little mechanical things. The little sequencing actions that should really, really, you should not do because they make you lose small edges for no reason. So I'm going to give examples. Sometimes I see people playing several spells in a turn and they're going to play one spell and then a spell that draws a card. And it's obvious that you should always start with the spell that draws a card because you might draw a different card and change your following play. And so that's just always do the things that gives you new information first, and then do your other play. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, I'm not going to play a creature, then a discard spell. I'm going to start with the discard spell, see what's up, and then maybe play another creature. And I see people doing these small mistakes all the time. So little sequencing things with the lands is the same thing. Mm-hmm. People playing lands when they should not. Yeah, that's another thing. People cracking fetches at the end of turn just because why not? Because we're in modern, so I need to get my come into play tapland. Well, guess what? Maybe the one point of damage will matter and you should not act mechanically. You should think about it because the thinning aspect is very marginal. You already have a bunch of lands in play, so don't fetch because this might just kill you two lightning bolts down the road or one attack or something. So many small mistakes I see in Legacy. People cracking wastelands in the end step when there's no reason to do that. You can just untap, take your turn, process the new information from your draw step, and then proceed to crack your wasteland. So I just see a lot of bad timing for casting spells, spam spells, instant spells, playing lands, cracking fetch lands, activating cards, and sequencing. And these things don't make sense from a logical point of view, and they're not very hard. They're just reflexes, heuristics you mm-hmm. should acquire, because you will win way more without even thinking more, without doing anything crazy. You just start with the spell that changes the information.
I really like that. I was going to ask for a good rule of thumb, and that's it right there. You know, start with a spell that gives you more information, like drawing a card first or seeing a hand first. Now, you did talk about heuristics. Isn't it a heuristic that Magic players have developed to, crack the fetch at the end of the turn to get the land and all that stuff? And so, but you're saying based on the situation, you know, you might not want to do that. Like if it's later on in the game, you have all your lands, just be mindful of what you're doing.
Yeah. So I think we definitely have heuristics as Magic players, but, you should still question them. Like, don't attack your 2-drop into their 2-drop and limit it without thinking. That's something you usually do, but it's a balance to find between always reconsider things, question why you're doing the things you're doing, but don't waste too much mental energy because, so yeah, it's a very hard balance to find. You can think about everything, and usually when I play a game, there are some key moments in the game where I will really stop and take my time to think, but otherwise, I play very, very fast because I know the situations. I've been in this situation a bunch of time, and I know what's right just because of practice and experience. Mm-hmm. And these things you can't really like teach someone. You have to get them yourself. But I think you should build your own heuristics, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not bad to have one, but question every habit you have and try to find the best ones, like the piece of advice I told you. And always crack your fetch. If you consider it for a minute, you will see it doesn't make any sense.
Hmm. Love it. Love it. Good stuff. So we talked a little bit about the mistake that you see players make and what we can do about that. So
also, I'd say another mistake, still about information. People give you so much information when you play against lower level people in a Grand Prix. So people show me their hands all the time when they flick their cards. People show me their decks when they shuffle. People pick up their graveyards when they draw a Torrential Gearhulk or Snapcaster Mage. I've seen pros do that also, but it's such a big information. We're in top deck mode, you're a blue control deck, you draw your card, you check your graveyard. You might be bluffing, but let's be honest, at GP level, there's like a 90% chance the guy just drew a Torrential Gearhulk and now I can play about it. So I don't know, try to just arrange your graveyard in a way that you can look at it without being too obvious. Giving a lot of information, or people who are emotional and they draw lands and they make sad faces and you know they've drawn a land. Once again, they might be bluffing, but most of the time you get information there. And information is valuable. In Magic, information is key. It's everything. So just think about the information you give in and try to keep it for yourself. As I said, I really like playing Cabal Therapy. And this is basically a card that is based on information. And every single piece of information you can master with Cabal Therapy, I will take it and I will make the best decision if I can.
I love that. So what have you learned from Magic, Louis, that you've been able to apply to other areas of your life?
I think I've definitely developed a more rational decision-making process. Maybe a mindset that is more based on calculus, on calculation, projections, statistics. Yeah, so the way of thinking, a lot of things we learn from Magic, like don't complain about the random things. Mm. Don't complain about the things you had no control over, you know? Yeah. It doesn't matter to be mana screwed. Well, it's the same thing in life. That's basically stoicism in philosophy, but
yep.
don't lose your head over things you had no control over. I'm not going to complain that the weather is bad today, just like I'm not going to complain that I had to mulligan to 5. This is now I'm going to get better. So focus on the things you need to get better at. That's the lesson. Then the other lesson, just in the decision making. If I do this, what's going to happen with this outcome? What's the likelihood of this outcome happening? What's the likelihood of this play, quote unquote, being a good one, a good decision, a bad decision? So maybe a more thoughtful and careful decision making process. Also, all the stress management, anger management. Magic puts you through a lot of pressure, a lot of like nervous things, and through the years with the tournaments you learn to control them, and I think this probably makes you way, way more calm for other stressful situations.
I love that. Don't stress about the things that you have no control over, you know. Yeah. And that's so huge. And like you said, it's the Stoic philosophy
it's actually kind of strange how detached from the game I've managed to get. Like I went 4-5 with my buddies at the Team Grand Prix. I thought we had a great team. We played well. We lost two players. We made a lot of mistakes. So all the ingredients were there for being very tilted, but I just really, really did not care at all. So even missing the PT because I lost my passport, which by the way is my fault, so I could really get crazy over that, really hasn't affected me all that much. So I'm kind of happy about that.
Awesome. Yeah, that's neat. A lot to learn from you in that for sure. Now, as far as Magic goes, what are some of your shortcomings that you are working on to become a better player?
So combat math, complicated boards, tight races. You know, I sometimes end up games where I say, okay, I think PV would have won this game. Owen would have won this game. So I'm finding the grindy games, the control games, the combo games. I play a lot of archetypes. But the most basic math thing, just trying to plan a few turns in advance what's going to happen exactly, Like the attack a 3/2 creature with a good ability into my random Grizzly Bear Unlimited. My instinct tells me I should block. This is good value. His card is better. Maybe he spent more mana to play it. But what I should really do is say, okay, what's the race looking like? Maybe I can take three twice and then hit him just once for 2 damage, but this will change the clock, or then if I draw this parent spell. So basically, I think I play a little bit too fast, and I should think more. Just think more, yeah.
Yeah. And what would you say is your best format?
My best format, I would say, is Legacy. I haven't played Legacy in a while, but it's where I got my first success. I top 8ed the Star City Open. I went to the finals of the Eternal Weekend, the European Legacy Championships. So there was a time where I just I was full on grinding Grixis Delver on Magic Online, and I would have like 81 or 82% win rate in real life competitive tournaments. So I would do dual lands on the weekends, and then $1,000 in the Star City, same thing at the European Championships. So I played a lot of Legacy, and now I don't play it a ton because there's basically no Legacy in the GP Pro Tour circuit. But so I will say I still think it's where I get the biggest edge over players of my level, but maybe it's been a little bit wearing down. But it's not been that long a time, and Legacy doesn't change a lot. So I would say it's Legacy.
So for someone who is considering, getting into Legacy, what advice do you have for them? Like, what's a good beginner deck, or what are some insights that you have to that particular format?
Well, I don't know. Just play blue.
Okay.
Magic Online is good. Legacy, you might have the issue of cards being expensive, unavailable, not having a lot of players in my town. So I have the luck that in my town, we have a strong Legacy community. We meet every weekday. So I used to go there every week. It was a big event. Now I just come and say hi from time to time. But the same group of friends playing Legacy every week, the level is fine. And so I was fortunate to find that. But even if you don't, Magic Online, I'm a big fan of Magic Online. So I would say that for every format, especially limited. But for Legacy, cards are cheap. Like, a Legacy deck is not more expensive than a Modern deck. I think it's cheaper. It might be as expensive as some Standard decks. And you will find opponents. So you can basically get through the two difficulties you get into playing Legacy, which are finding the cards and finding the opponents. You can get both of these on Magic Online. And the competition is very high because you have a lot of very good players grinding Magic Online Legacy.
That's great advice. So if you want to get into Legacy, start with Magic Online. So that's really straightforward, and I love it. Absolutely love it. Now,
maybe what if you don't like the formats, and if you invested $2,000 in dual lands and such, and you have to get rid of them? It's a big investment, right? On Magic Online, you can cash out more easily. You can change formats more easily, and it's going to be less expensive in the first place as well.
I love it. That's good stuff. Now, do you have anything that you do on a daily basis, like you know some kind of habit or something like that, either magic related or non-magic related, that you feel helps contribute to your success as a player?
I don't think so.
Just play a lot.
It depends on whether I have to prepare for a tournament. So honestly, I used to play way more than I do now. There was a period of my life where I would really, really spend all nighters on Magic Online and try to explain the online PTQs and such. But since I'm qualified for the PT now, like, it's been basically a year since I haven't had to play in PTQs, and these take a lot of time. The biggest grind as a Magic player are the Magic Online PTQs, and there's only like a little handful of hardcore crazy dudes that play them because it's very hard. You have to, the prelims are scheduled, so you don't choose your hour. If you're in Europe, you have like the 1 a.m. one, the 5 a.m. one. You have to do like 5-round events. If you lose 2 rounds, you're out, so you don't sleep. And then you have to be the only. So, and then it's a winner-take-all event on the weekend when there's like one guy that goes to the Pro Tour and like the 500 other guys just completely wasted their Sunday like in front of their computer. So that was definitely the biggest crap. And I used to do a lot of that. No, I don't. I don't even know if I would have the drive and the energy to do that anymore. So I wish I don't have to go back to that. But no, I don't say I have like a daily habit related to MTG because my schedule is a little bit erratic.
Yeah.
On days and some weeks, even some months, I might not have any MTG related activity. And if there's like 2 Grand Prix coming up, like for example, right now I'm in a like GP period, I would play way more. And of course, before the PT, you would get like 1 week of intense testing in-house.
Right. I was going to ask you, what events do you have coming up?
So I'm going to play GP Madrid in 10 days or something. So it's going to be Team Modern. Definitely looking forward to that. Team events, of course, the funniest. I love Modern. I'm having fun practicing new decks, testing new decks, and I hope we'll do better than in the Limited Team Grand Prix. Then I have, I don't know the GP schedule. I think there's a GP in London, but the biggest next tournament is the PT Modern in Bilbao in February.
Yes. So, and there is a GP in London in January, I believe.
So I'm not sure if the team will want to attend the GP just a week prior to the PT. So I will just follow what the team does, I think.
Cool. And what team are you on?
French team. I don't really know. We don't really know right now how we're going to be organized, but there are like a lot of good players qualified. Pierre Dagen, Guillaume Matignon, Guillaume Wafotapa, and then like the French regulars, grinders like me, silver, bronze pros.
Excellent. Pierre's great. He's been a past guest of the show too. So that's pretty cool. Pretty cool. Now, how many pro points do you have right now?
So I have 5, 7. I think I have 7. It's going to be 10 with the PT. So I hope missing the PT in Albuquerque won't make me miss out like silver status or something. Last year I ended up with 18, which is fine because it was my first season of grind. But only 2 short of silver, so I'm bronze right now, and I've already locked a bronze for this season, so I'm confident I will get silver at the end of the year.
Awesome. That'll be a lot of fun. And you're going to do that with, you have this Grand Prix coming up, you have the Pro Tour, and then you have several other Grand Prix that you're going to be attending next year. And
very cool. Every European GP, basically.
Perfect. Oh, that is so exciting. I love cheering on past guests. So that'll be fun to watch. So I do want to remind the prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Louis, you can do so in the Facebook group. So mtgprotutor.com/Facebook group. We'll redirect you there and we'll get him in the group and you can tag him in the post and say thanks for being on the show or what have you. So Louis, as we close things out, what is one final piece of guidance you have for us? Either something you already said that you want to emphasize or something new you want to leave with us here at the end.
I think at some point I was very obsessed with magic, trying to really get good results. I recently wrote an article about that. I sent it to you. I think I could just put it on your group. And I don't think that was a good mindset. So I would think a lot about winning at magic. I would go to bed every night dreaming about like Rich Hagen interviews and whatnot and raising trophies and feature matches. And I think that put too much pressure, and results in magic are erratic. They're cyclical. Your level of expectation changes with time. And so I think this can lead you to being unhappy. And so what I would really advise is don't be results oriented. So being results oriented can have like 2 meanings. And it's very important to not be results oriented in both meanings. So it could be a little bit long, but I'm going to try to give an explanation.
Please.
First, in magic, being results oriented means because something happened, then you make a conclusion. So I lost, therefore I played bad. Or I won, therefore I played good. I lost 2 games with that deck, therefore this is a bad matchup. And that's a bias we all have, and of course it's natural one. I see what I see and I make conclusion about that. But usually we have a very, very small sample. And when you're results oriented is when you make a conclusion based on a small sample. And in magic, this is very bad. Like, oh, I made the bad play because I lost. No, that's not true. Maybe you made the correct play, the one that would have worked 67% of the time, and you just happened to be in the 33%. But that doesn't mean it was bad. On the other hand, it's not because you won the game that you should not question what you've done in this game. It's very likely that you took some bad lines, and it's not because in the end you were successful that you chose the good lines. So don't be results-oriented in the sense that don't look at the outcome. Just look at what was going on earlier. I don't need to know the outcome of an action to know if it was a good decision or not, basically. Outcomes don't matter. As long as there's randomness, you don't care about the outcome. Just look at the process and the decision making. So I would say you need to be process oriented. Think about how you train. Think about how you practice your decision tree, your decision making, your decisions, and the outcomes will get better. You will get more and more percents, but don't hang yourself on the outcomes. They're not important. And then as a like philosophy about thinking about magic. Don't make your happiness correlated to magic results, because magic results come and go. Magic results are cruel. And even if you win something, as I think I explained well in my article, you're going to find a great surge of joy. And then you're going to start, because that's how competition works, you're going to start thinking about the next event and the next event. And so you never take time to appreciate what you've really accomplished. So you're not going to be happy. You're always going to be frustrated, because you're always going to want more. That's the nature of desire. As long as you desire something, it's because you don't have it. And as long as you have something, you stop desiring it. It's not an object of desire anymore, and you start craving for something else. And that's the way competitive drive works, and that's what makes us magic players work. But you should not make this competitive drive the source of your emotions, of your well-being in life, of your happiness. You should find other sources, whether it be in the game, the friends, the traveling, the game, the practicing, the reflection, the deck building, whatnot, the tournament experience, which I definitely do, or outside the game. But I don't think this particular element of your life should be very, very important. And I think you should make your best to deflate its importance the most you can. Just basically don't care about the results. Just think about getting better. Think about practicing. Think about talking with better players than you. And the results, they will come. But don't start by the outcome. Don't start at the end of the process. Focus on the path, on the journey, on the process, not on the goal and what's at the end.
That is really good advice. So I advise everybody to hit rewind 30 seconds a couple times, go back and listen to the last 3 minutes or so, and really, really clue into what Louis says. So thank you. That was also really great.
Somehow, the fact that I'm less invested in results, I've also had better results,
yep,
paradoxically. So I don't think these are linked, because I don't really see how it could be linked. Maybe I have less pressure, I sleep better the night before Grand Prix and whatnot, but I think these are small edges. But don't think that because you stop thinking and obsessing over results, you're going to not get better results. You might still get them as long as you get better. There's a difference between your play level and your results. Mm-hmm. And you can improve one and the others will follow, but just focus on your level.
You know, you may be surprised to hear that you're not the first person to make that observation, that we've had several guests who have realized that when they remove the pressure from themselves in one way, shape, or form, that they do perform better as well. So it's a very interesting phenomenon that I love to explore more. So that was really cool.
I'm not surprised at all.
Yeah. Well, Louis, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to Multiverse, and thank you so much for your time, for sharing your stories and sharing your experiences and expounding your thoughts with us. You are a hero among planeswalkers. It has been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
Thanks for having me on the show.
There you have it, episode 259, all wrapped up and ready to go. Thank you so much, Louis, for coming on to the show. Prodigies, you can get the show notes at mtgpro2.com/Louis Bachaud, and that's B-A-C-H-A-U-D. And there you'll find a synopsis of what we talked about, as well as links to any resources that may have been mentioned. As we close things out, thank you so much for joining me today. I love doing these shows for you. I want to give a huge thank you to Paragon City Games for supporting the show. They provide the prize support for the Steel League, which we just wrapped up. Congratulations again to Saban for winning. It's always fun to play with all the prodigies who joined the league. We will definitely be doing another one in Ixalan. I'm going to be releasing a video with lessons learned on the way ahead. Each and every league, we learn something new. We try everything out to make the experience smoother, and we are really getting dialed in on a great system. So check out the Facebook group for that for sure. Also, Paragon City Games provides the prize support for the patron-exclusive giveaways. Next episode, I'll be announcing who won the November From the Vault Transform giveaway. So that'll be really fun. Stay tuned for that. Of course, if you are interested in becoming a patron of the show, go to mtgpro2.com/Patreon, where you can learn more about that. Thanks so much for joining me today. Absolutely love doing this. Once again, good luck to everybody going to GP Oklahoma City. If you want to attend the Pro Tutor Prodigy meetup, it will be Friday night for sure. The details will be in the event that we have set up in the group. It's going to be hosted by Luke and Dan, who are two of the admins for the group. So feel free to swing on by, play some magic, have some fun, and snap some pictures and post them in the group so we can see the prodigies getting together in real life, as it were, right? Anyways, thanks so much for joining me. Can't wait to do this again. Next week, we have two more great guests lined up, so stay tuned for that. And until then, I'm Sean of The Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over, so you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.